There, Johnny Green and his Blues Cowboys, all the way from Maitland with our intro song there, Highway 49. And hi, my name's Bill Dewdney, and welcome to Highway 49 Blues Plus for a night of blues and related music from around our planet here on Coast FM 963. But before we get going, I'd like to thank Cameron for a great mix there with 90s to now. Okay, thanks for joining me. Tonight we have a special guest, American blues rock singer, songwriter, guitarist Tony Sarno here with us tonight, and we'll be having a chat with Tony very shortly. That was our special guest of the evening, Tony Sarno, with a song called Blue Shadows from his album It's a Blues Thing. And in the studio with us tonight, we have Tony Sarno. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Good, Bill. How you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And welcome to Coast FM and welcome to the Central Coast. We're really pleased to have you here. And I'll just give our listeners a little bit of background. Tony is an American singer, songwriter and guitarist and has recorded numerous critically acclaimed rock and blues albums. He's toured the USA, Canada, Europe, Australia, Argentina and Mexico with his band. He has dozens of published songs with pieces written for TV and other broadcasts. And Tony produced international releases Thunder Chanks, Tony Sarno's Silent Night and co-produced Dee Archer's Sooner or Later. He formed the Atlanta Underground with Wet Willie bass player Jack Hall and the Georgia Satellites' Randy DeLay. Tony also produces background music for CBS Sports and music for Big Fish Audio, and he's shared numerous concert bills with B.B. King, as well as Stevie Ray Vaughan, Hall & Oates, and Johnny, or the late Johnny Winter, and Little Feat, one of my favourite bands, Little Feat. Tony's recorded for CBS, Holland, Ice House, Priority, Marconi, and bands with records. His music appears in the Craig Brewer film Poor and Hungry and on the Masters of Blues CD compilation with Albert King, Buddy Guy, and the Allman Brothers. Well, mate, that is quite some sort of resume you've got there.
It runs the gamut, doesn't it, Bill?
And, okay. First question, where were you born and where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I was only there for a very short time, and then we moved to New York, the New York area, Tarrytown, New York, and basically grew up around the New York area, lived in Manhattan for quite a while, lived upstate New York, and then moved south to Atlanta, and because that was where the South being kind of that Never Never Land that we always heard about, and that's where our favorite music came out of the South. So I wanted to find out what was in the water down there. So I went down, and actually I knew Jack Hall from Wet Willie. And you're familiar with Wet Willie, are you? Mm-hmm. And Jimmy and I know Jimmy. He's in Nashville as well. And so I went down, and I knew Jack, and we put a band together, and we toured mostly East Coast and back up to New York, back and forth. And we recorded a number of sides with Rodney Mills, who is a producer that did Greg Allman, 38 Special. He was the engineer on all the early Lynyrd Skynyrd things. And we did a bunch of things with Rodney. Now he's a mastering engineer, and so he masters our records, and he's not producing anymore. But anyway, so then I met Keith Christopher, who started a band called the Georgia Satellites. Matter of fact, used to be called Keith and the Satellites. And I met Keith and at a little place called Fat Matt's Rib Shack, which was a little really dive place. And a guy named Kevin Jennings, who was actually from England and discovered the Georgia Satellites, asked me to play with his band that night. And I didn't want to do it. It was a New Year's Eve gig. And I said, oh, man. $35 and a plate of ribs. You got, come on, man. Anyway, I told him I would do it, and I did it. And we had a pretty ragtag band up there, and he invited one of his friends, Keith Christopher, to c- come up and sit in with us. And he took the bass player's bass, and it was the same bass and the same amp. And all of a sudden, the sound got huge. I looked, I said, oh, man, that's my bass player. So I became friends with Keith and started using him on gigs. And that was around the time he just started with Billy Joe Shaver. And anyway, he was living in Nashville. And so we started doing some gigs and a lot of 8-9 hour gigs in my old 68 Cadillac Sedan DeVille. We were doing a lot of road work. And Keith is absolutely the funniest guy you'll ever meet in your life. So he had me on the floor laughing. I was driving, but but anyway, so we were doing a lot of gigs, and then I said, man, I got to go back to New York. And he goes, well, why don't you, because we were doing, you know, the small clubs 3 or 4 nights a week, and I said, man, this is getting nowhere. He said, why don't you try Nashville? So I went up. He invited me up to come up and hang out. And actually, we had a gig booked. I got a call on a Friday afternoon, and this agent said, hey, I need you to play a frat party in Nashville tomorrow night. And I was in Atlanta. I said, all right. So I called Keith. I said, Keith, can we put a band together for tomorrow night? Because I didn't know anybody in Nashville except Keith. So he called a young drummer he had just done a session with, Rick Donnelly, and then he called Wayne Perkins. Now, I don't know, Bill, if you know who Wayne Perkins is, but he was a Muscle Shoals session musician and was on the Rolling Stones Black and Blue album, which was, come to find out, the Stones auditioning their new guitar player. Of course, we all know that Ronnie Wood got the gig. But Wayne was the... he actually played on a couple cuts. I think he played on what was it? Little Nikita? What was that song? Anyway, so he called Wayne, and Wayne couldn't do it, so he called Eddie Shaver. And Eddie ended up doing the gig with us, and we played this fraternity party with all these straight-laced kids. And Eddie was on the floor rolling around, and we rocked the house. And that was the beginning of my stay in Nashville. And I've been there almost 20 years now, on and off. But so that's kind of a long... answer to your question.
No, that was great. It's funny you should mention Muscle Shoals, because I've just watched a documentary on Muscle Shoals. Yeah. And I also did, I was reading about Etta James, and she went over there actually and recorded at one stage.
Oh, Ed Rick Hall's. Yeah, everybody recorded at Muscle Shoals.
Yeah. Okay, mate. How would you describe Tony Sarno's sound and style?
Well, my main influence was always B.B. King, and so I think we have to start there. But over the years, I've developed into. I mean, I'm a blues rock guitarist, so I'm not a strictly a blues guitar, but I love the blues, and I think doing a number of shows with B.B. King over the years, I think I developed a showmanship that. He was the greatest. B.B. King was the greatest and the most. He was the perfect gentleman. He would always introduce his band, and then he would introduce me, which was incredible. But anyway, as far as my style, it's quite unique because I play a Fender Telecaster, and I come from a kind of a funky kind of Telecaster kind of guitar playing. I'm trying to think who we could. And you probably don't remember this band. They're from the early 70s, called Rhinoceros. And it was a guitarist named Danny Weiss. And he played this really funky Telecaster. And I'm trying to think who else. Actually, you know, Joe Walsh kind of played that kind of sound too. But I guess for the blues fans out there, it would be most consistent with someone like an Albert Collins. So I have kind of that, you know, heavy Albert Collins. Not that the track you just played is more like BB, but most of my other stuff is more of a more high intensity Telecaster.
Right. Okay. Where do you think your creativity comes from? You've written a lot of songs. Do you have a muse?
Well, it's funny because I talk about it when we do gigs, and I say you'll find a dog reference in a lot of my songs because there's always something about a dog, and it probably comes out of love and loss because I've always loved dogs, and when I was a kid, probably about 8 years old, we had a We had a big black poodle dog. And unfortunately, he got into the neighbor's garage on Easter and ate the neighbor's rabbits. So, so anyway, but unfortunately, the neighbor was the chief of police. So my sister and I came home from church about a week later and come to find out that Sam was gone. He was now down in a gas station in the Bronx protecting the place because he was a crazy dog. But that was the trauma maybe from which this all started with the dog reference.
What would you say was your best and worst experience in the career so far? And one of the reasons I asked that is I read about a night you had in Buffalo.
Now, where was that written? You must have gotten the whole bio because that was, we opened up for the Stray Cats, and they were very big at the time. I think it was around 84, maybe 80, I can't remember, around that time. And you remember the punk scene,
yes,
Bill. I mean, I guess it was, now I come to find out it was kind of an honor when they spat at you. But at the time, we drove 8 hours up from New York City, and we got up there, and our dressing room was across from theirs, and we got there. We were road worn. I mean, it was, and we got in there, and their road crew had eaten up all our food and drank everything, and then we got out and started playing, and the system started feeding back, and we started getting pelted with everything under the kitchen sink, and it was pretty traumatic. But I'd already been in the business for a few years at that point, and I got through it. But I think the drummer still hasn't recovered. But that was probably that was a low point. But we did go out, and I don't know if, have you been to Buffalo?
No.
Buffalo is right at the top of the United States, right near Canada, and colder than a well digger's. Which is anyway, but the people up there are absolutely the nicest people in the world. We went out for drinks afterwards, and all these people came up to us and said, "Oh, you don't pay any attention to those people. That was just the people in the front row. They're the maniacs that love that band." He goes, "We loved you," and that was when we got introduced to Buffalo Chicken Wings. So there was a silver lining, but that was probably that was a pretty low point. I've seen some others, but that would have to be there. And as far as a high point, I'd probably have to say that the shows with B.B. King and Stevie Ray Vaughan. I think working with those guys was just, it was a great, it was an honor, and to do. But I gotta say, Sunday night in Threadbow was awesome. I got Chris Nabel here with me, our drummer, and we got that little pub with about 100 people going. It was our third and last night, and the crowd was just unbelievable. So I got to say Sunday night was a very big high point in my career. I mean, because what I find with the Australian people is my music resonates, and because we're all kindred spirits. We love the music. It's very unpretentious. And, of course, in the States, you got the coast, the left coast and the right coast, and L.A. and New York and stuff. And they're very cosmopolitan, and our music is just a little too,
too much for them.
Yeah, too much, and, the little, too proletariat, let me say.
You mentioned Chris. Chris Nabel, hi, Chris. How are you, mate? And Chris is part of Tony's band, which is Jacko's old outfit or part of Darren Jack. Your backing band is the Darren Jack band.
Awesome band.
With our listeners would know who Jacko is, and they'd know who Chris Nabel is, who are part of a band called Third Degree. And I believe you got Al Britton on bass.
Al Britton on bass guitar and Mike Gubb on keys.
Fantastic. What a great lineup that is. And look forward to catching you this week on Australia Day.
Is that it, Chris?
No, you're on.
Well, we're doing the Coast Hotel at Budgieroy
on Sunday.
This coming Sunday, 28th.
Really look forward to that. Okay, Tony, where do you see the future of blues or blues rock music, and what do you think is required for it to continue for a younger generation?
Well, Bill, I mean, it was really encouraging at Threadbow this weekend, and I hadn't seen much of it all weekend, but Sunday night, there was a lot of young people there. And I think with technology being what it is, it seems like it's hit the ceiling. And with technology, I mean, how much where can it go? And so I think kids are looking maybe backwards to what we enjoyed, you know, as kids, and where, you know, all the music that we love, the Stones and AC/DC and stuff, where that came from, the blues. So you have to go back to those roots. And so I think the kids are looking for some guidance, because I think they've been fed all the nonsense that all the marketing people and stuff have fed them, and now they kind of want some truth. And as a matter of fact, the T-shirt you got there is called Blues Truth Connection, Tony Sarno's Blues Truth Connection, and I think it is about the truth. And I think as young people tend to we have a call coming in, do we, Bill? Anyway, so as young people tend to get fed up with what they're being fed, excuse the anyway. I think they look to our music as something, and it'll probably always be a niche, but that's good, because a niche can continue forever, whereas fads come and go, and generally never come back. They may, you know, they may make a little resurgence, but something like blues and basic rock and stuff, to me, I look at it like the hamburger. You know, it's not for everybody, but it's meat and potatoes, and it'll always be there. I'll never get sick of it.
I like that. Okay, what triggers your sense of humor?
Anything. What do you got?
Yeah, I can see you're a fun guy from the minute I met you.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, I like to have a good laugh, and that's why these guys are great to be with. We have a lot of laughs. I mean, it's, you know, as you know, being on the road is never easy, and I'll never write a song about it, though, Bill, because I always see these bands, oh, poor me, I'm on the road. Over the years, I've come to realize that, you know, most people work really hard for a living and a lot of times doing things they don't want to do. And I believe that my job here is to get them away from that. And so that includes humor and just good music to make them dance. I mean, if I can make people dance, I've done my job. As you know, many musicians, it's very egocentric and it's always about them. And it took me a long time to realize that it's not, and it's really about the audience and to make them enjoy this ride with me. Or let me enjoy the ride with them, because it's really hard to put yourself in their position. I've been there. I've done a lot of, you know, different types of work, driving limousines in New York City and installing fire alarms and anything. And I still do anything I have to do to feed the family. But understanding what people go through day to day, it's an honor to be able to get up on stage and hopefully make them laugh, but definitely make them dance.
That's great. Look, it's been fantastic talking to you, mate. And before we wind it up, you made a quote, and I'll quote your quote. The usual theme of relationships, good and bad, is at the center of my songs, but they are not always human relationships. You may have answered that
there it is
earlier on when you spoke about your dog.
You're
a dog lover, aren't you?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. There's actually on in the inside cover of I think the second album, my self-titled album, there's a picture of my dog up at the mixing board with me, and that was Puccini, so that was my boy for a long, long time, and we don't have a dog now. We just most recently had a rat. We had a fancy rat, but I'm not going to be writing any songs anytime soon about him.
It's already been done.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Okay, mate. Well, look, we appreciate your time, and thank you very much for taking the time to come in on a late night. And you've got a really busy schedule through the week. On Thursday, you're at the Lazotte up in Newcastle. Great venue that is. On Friday, you're out there at the Hawkesbury Hotel, Windsor.
That's right, out at Windsor.
Then you're down the coast, down the Gong.
At the Heritage Hotel at Bull Eye.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then on Sunday, you're at the Coast Hotel, Budgie Wire.
That's going to be a big one.
Yeah, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yep. Get there.
That's going to be huge.
All you
yeah.
local people who love blues and blues rock.
Don't miss that one with Tony Sarno and the Darren Jack Band.
Yeah.
How about Bull Eye, though? I think that's going to be my favorite, Bill.
Bull Eye.
Because we played the first time out, the first two times, we played the Rex Hotel in Wollongong. Yeah. Yeah. And it was off the chain. I mean, that was so. Supposedly, this is the same type of thing, right?
You
Chris?
Haven't been to the Coast Hotel at Budgie Wire yet, Tony.
You'll love it. It's a great venue.
Great it's going to be a beauty. And the gig down at Wollongong's going to be great too. At Bull Eye, sorry, is going to be great too. They're all going to be good. The few gigs we've got coming up this week. So, thanks for having us, Bill.
It's a pleasure, guys.
Awesome, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's 10 minutes to 11 o'clock. You're on your Blues Highway, Highway 49.
Living on the Coast. Coast FM 963.
Coast FM. Here's another song from Tony Sarno's album. It's a blues thing. It's called Crybaby Blues.